Radio Prague News.
The Czech Republic could guarantee a small part of a loan within the bailout for Greece. The Czech finance minister has expressed little enthusiasm for a third aid package for Greece, and the Masters of Rock Festival has attracted more than 25,000 visitors. The Czech Republic will not have to make direct payments in connection with the planned bailout for Greece, but it could provide a guarantee for a short-term loan. This news was confirmed on Monday by Tomáš Prouza, the State Secretary for European Affairs. It was confirmed on Monday that the provision of short-term guarantees within Greece's bailout could apply to all EU countries, including the Czech Republic. Greece will need financial assistance yet before there is a final agreement on the new program. Along with other options, it may be granted a short-term loan from the European Financial Stabilization Mechanism. Loans from EFSM are guaranteed by all EU countries in a ratio corresponding to their contributions within the EU budget. The Czech Republic would thus guarantee 1.13%. The Czech Finance Minister Andrej Babiš, in related news, has expressed little enthusiasm after the results of last-minute talks were announced. Representatives of all 19 Eurozone countries arrived unanimously at a decision to provide Greece with a third financial aid package. In response, Mr. Babiš warned Greece's crisis would repeat a few years down the line. He said he considered Greece's departure from the Eurozone and a writing off of part of Greece's debt as better alternatives. The government on Monday approved a new foreign policy roadmap focusing on both economic diplomacy but also human rights in the years to come, the country's Secretary for European Affairs, Tomáš Prouza, confirmed. According to CTK, the roadmap draws in part on earlier legacies such as the humanistic thought of Czechoslovakia's first president, T.G. Masaryk, the Prague Spring, or the Charter 77 human rights movement. The document also reportedly stresses the Czech Republic's place within the European Euro-Atlantic space, represented by membership in the EU and NATO. Marcela Ondřejová, the lawyer for former Social Democrat MP and Governor David Rath, has requested that her client be acquitted of corruption charges, expressing the view that claims of his guilt by the prosecution was a mix of conjecture and speculation. She charged that there was no direct evidence nor a combination of indirect evidence against the defendant. Mr. Rath is on trial on charges of having taken bribes and of having manipulated public tenders in the central Bohemian region. In 2012, he was arrested with a suspected bribe of 7 million crowns on his person. If found guilty, he could face a sentence of up to 12 years in prison. The Czech Republic's Foreigners Police detained 81 illegal migrants, including children, over the weekend, a foreign police spokeswoman Kateřina Rendlová told CTK on Monday. During the first half of this year, policemen detained more than 3,000 illegal migrants, which is 48% higher than in the same period last year. Most of those caught came from Syria, Iraq, and Afghanistan, and most were detained in the regions of South Moravia, Uski, Nad Labem, and Prague. Police have stepped up controls on trains and on major roads in the border area since mid-June. Finally, the 13th annual Masters of Rock Festival, which took place in Vizovice in South Moravia, saw more than 25,000 visitors this year, organizers have said. Over 4 days, fans were able to see bands including the Dutch symphonic metal group Within Temptation, or Switzerland Crocus, and the Scottish punk band, The Exploited. The festival came to a close with a performance by the Finnish band, Nightwish. I'm Jan Wellinger. You'll find more news at radio.cz.
You are listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio, with me, Ruth Franíková. Coming up in today's program, we look at proposals to grow the Czech farm sector. We have the roundup of the latest Czech sports news. And later we meet James Ragan, a Czechoslovak-American poet who spends every summer at Václav Havel's old flat. All that coming up, so please stay with us. Compared with industry, agriculture has been something of a Cinderella sector for the Czech economy. But there are now moves to try and give it a more dynamic character and encourage farmers to process more of the goods they produce and boost local employment in the process. Chris Johnston has more.
One feature of the Czech borderlands are massive lorries loaded with the latest felled trees heading off towards Germany and Austria for processing. The timber is processed abroad and a few months later will likely return to the Czech Republic, this time as wood pellets, furniture or other finished goods. Czechs will have provided the raw material, but the extra value and jobs resulted will have been created abroad. The same scenario for wood is repeated for other products such as barley, corn and oilseed rape. It's little surprise, then, that agriculture as a whole contributes less than 3% to wealth creation in the country and employs around the same proportion of the workforce. And farms are rarely the dynamic hubs of local economic and community life that they are in other countries, although a quarter of Czechs live in what might be described as rural communities. It is a weakness that the Czech Ministry of Agriculture would like to remedy with the rollout of a much more ambitious programme of help for farmers, which is aimed at encouraging them to process at least some of the raw materials they produce. Vladimir Suchy is one of the top managers of the small state-controlled support and guarantee fund for farm and forest firms, which the Ministry of Agriculture would like to be one of its main instruments for transforming farmers into processors and small businessmen. He explains the goals that have been set.
Up till now, we have not supported processing in the farm sector. We now have a program for that. Let's say someone is producing smoked meats or something like that and wants to buy some new equipment. Hitherto, they did not get any support, but now they could get soft loans. They will not be given direct aid as such, but we will help make the loans affordable.
For example, the aid could mean that a loan which would normally have an interest rate of 5% could be cut to around 3%. A similar program will offer help for forestry companies to buy equipment as well, and another aspect would help those processing companies that employ the disabled. Under a proposal advanced by the Ministry of Agriculture, around 500 million crowns could be available for such help in the first year, but the proposal still needs to be given the final green light from the Cabinet. The Support and Guarantee Fund itself has been up and running since 1993, providing loans for farmers to buy land and providing cheaper insurance against harvest failures. To date, around 150 billion crowns in soft loans have been paid out. The peak years of activity were between 1996 and 1999. Those sort of figures should be put in the context of a Czech agricultural sector that was for many years in the early 1990s actually in contraction as private farmers struggled to emerge from the ashes of the old collectivised system. Money was tight and many land ownership issues were confused and up in the air. 6 or 7 years after the collapse of communism, production for the agricultural sector had shrunk to 70% of its size before that event, and it is still trying to recoup some of those losses.
Chris Johnston with that report. But now Ian Willoughby has the roundup of the latest Czech sports news.
We begin with rowing and the news that the Czech Republic's Mirka Knapková picked up a silver medal in the women's single sculls at a World Rowing Cup event in Switzerland's Lucerne. Knapkova, who is the reigning Olympic champion, had been third at the midway point of Sunday's final, but stepped up a gear.
From my perspective, the race went well overall. I usually start more slowly and then concentrate on the second half of the race. I always try to have the strongest finish possible and to keep something in the tank for the end.
Knapkova was beaten by Kim Crow of Australia, who crossed the line on Lake Rothsee, a convincing 7 seconds ahead of the Czech. With the Olympics coming up again next year, Knapka says besting Crow in Rio will be a major challenge.
It's a headache for my trainer. Even last year, she was way out in front. Beating her is a tough challenge. I need to train more and find some fresh ideas when it comes to tactics and technique. But the Olympics are getting closer and my competitors' performances in general are getting better.
Meanwhile, Knapkova's compatriot Andrei Sinek didn't fare so well in Lucerne. His fifth-place finish meant he again failed to reach the podium in the World Cup. Indeed, Sinek said it was his worst performance ever in a single sculls race. The title holder will be looking to find some form again before next month's World Championships in France. Cycling and in the Tour de France, the Sky team featuring Czech rider Leopold Koenig narrowly missed out on first place in Sunday's ninth stage, which was a time trial, with their performance ensuring that Chris Froome held on to the leader's yellow jersey. Nevertheless, Koenig was frustrated that Sky had lost to the BMC racing team by the very narrowest of margins.
We're disappointed. Unfortunately, they beat us by a second. But we put in a great performance. I think we've shown that we have what it takes to lead Chris all the way to Paris. I could have had my first stage victory. Admittedly, not an individual victory, but the team time trial is a wonderful thing.
Tennis and Petra Kvitova has fallen from second to fifth in the world rankings after a surprise third-round exit at Wimbledon. The Czech had got into the competition as a defending champion. Lucia Šafářová, who reached the 2014 semis at the All England Club only to lose to Kvitova, has slipped to eighth in the rankings after being knocked out this year in the fourth round. Finally, football, and goalkeeper Petr Cech has revealed why he will wear the number 33 shirt for his new club, Arsenal. The former Chelsea man said it was because that was his age and because he has to date made 333 league appearances. That's all the sport for today.
Ian Willoughby with a summary of the latest Czech sports news. Just a reminder that you are listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio. Coming up next, poet James Ragan has been teaching every summer at Prague's Charles University, but his ties to this part of the world go back a lot further than that, as he tells Ian Willoughby in this week's edition of One on One.
James Ragan is a US poet, screenwriter, playwright and teacher with extremely strong Czechoslovak ties. Indeed, some of his siblings were born in eastern Slovakia before his parents decided during the Depression to build new lives in Pittsburgh. Ragan began visiting communist Czechoslovakia as a teenager and in recent decades, inspired by a meeting with Václav Havel, the writer has been a visiting professor every summer at Prague's Charles University. When we met, I first asked James Ragan what language he'd spoken as a child.
We always spoke only Slovak at home, even till my parents passed away. They spoke broken English, but we always spoke Slovak. It was a great gift because from there I then learned about five other languages, easier than most. I remember even beginning to write in Slovak and then realizing nobody was there to read it, so I began to learn my English. But one thing I always say is that there was so much prejudice at the time toward anyone with a foreign language. So I remember being in a lot of fights as a child, and then I began to learn English.
In your household, was there great interest in all things Czechoslovak?
Yes, absolutely. We had books and music, Smetana and Dvorak, and so many poetry books.
And I guess your parents and your whole family must have followed quite closely the war and the accession of the communists.
Right, exactly. As a matter of fact, I was the first one to come back as a 16-year-old. I received a U.S. Fulbright fellowship to Europe. And while I was here, I had told my parents, I want to go back into the villages.
What year was that?
That would have been in 62, 66. The invasion hadn't happened yet in 68.
And how were you received as a young American?
First of all, I didn't announce it. I just arrived in my villages on the train by night and then by a bus. And I remember a young girl being on the bus looking at me like she recognized me. And then when she realized who I was, ran through all the villages to say, the Reagan cousin is here from America.
And was it a kind of culture shock for you coming here?
Yes, of course. We were spending so much time sending them our old clothes, a lot of money, a lot of medical stuff that was being stolen by the postmasters in the villages. And so my coming in was, I was bringing money in my own pocket and saw the poverty under which they were living. I was here through the 60s and into the 70s. With my parents, I brought them back after 40 years and would come back as often as I could.
I was reading that you were involved, and I quote here, in banned activism under communism.
Yes.
What exactly were you doing?
Well, I was writing poems. For example, especially after the Russian invasion, after the occupation, I wrote quite a bit against communism. For example, I wrote a poem about Jan Palach. I wrote one about Jan Zaitz. I wrote one who was the second one to immolate himself. And too often forgotten. I wrote a poem about Dubček. I wrote a poem about the actual Russian invasion. But even before that, I was already writing against so much of what was, the communist oppressions that I was witnessing.
But you were writing in English, I guess, in America?
Yeah, in English and
but how
translated.
Could you have been...
And translated,
so the translations were banned?
Yeah. And even my English, the book, when the first book was put on the shelves in Humene, my cousin, I guess, had done it. This was well after the 68 occupation. It was in English, but the titles clearly had Palak. It had, the titles clearly were saying. So that's when that incident occurred, where the librarian called me in.
But how did this affect you, that you were banned?
It affected me in a very proactive way. To say it that way, I remember getting another Fulbright professorship in Ljubljana. They knew I was going to go visit my family. They said, will you pass through Bratislava? I says, yes, I have to do a reading. And we're going to do it in the basement under candlelight. I mean, this is how things were. And a lot of Samizdat was already being sent around, including my work. So they said, would you take in 10 Newsweek magazines and 10 Time magazines? We'll put it in a way that will be in your luggage, but in a false cover. So they put them 10 and 10. And so I smuggled, the first time I smuggled something into the country. I was frightened. I was still pretty young and worried that, oh my, I could be caught. But when I delivered those magazines, especially in Bratislava, to that reading and to the people, it was a great thing for them because they were not allowed to receive that. So that's how active I became.
Would you have been followed by the STB?
Always.
Or I don't know.
Always. I had to report to police stations once I was named as one who was writing against the regime, but I was American. I would actually sneak into the country a few times, not without my passport. I mean, I came with a passport, but with the missionaries who were coming in. That way I brought things in and no one would question, because I was with a missionary group. I found them in Pittsburgh and they said, yes, you can join us. I never told them that I was also.
Missionaries were allowed into Slovakia?
Yes, Slovak-based missionaries. These were Slovak. Matter of fact, I was taught by Slovak nuns until fourth grade. So many of them had organizations, Sokol and other organizations, that would come into Czechoslovakia at the time, and especially into my area of the country.
Apart from the protest aspect, has your poetry been at all informed by your Czechoslovak experience?
Yes. Most of it has, I think. First of all, I'm always commended for the lyricism, the kind of musical quality of the poetry, but that comes right from the language, To moj perši jazyk, ja možem po slovensky dobre otvorit, And it's the Vyhodnarsky dialect. And even when I read for the presidents here, each of them said to me, don't lose that dialect. It's the most musical. So that influenced me, my rhythms. And, of course, the subject matter was constantly there.
Pre-1989, would you have known many Czechoslovaks in the States?
Yes, many. This was common because even when I went to the Chicago area and it was advertised that I had those roots, I'd have many of them in the audiences there, Gary, Indiana, where the steelworkers were. There were many cities like that across the country where you'd run into the Czechs, but in Pittsburgh especially.
Also, I heard that you knew or you know Ivan Pasur, the filmmaker.
Yes, Ivan was a very good friend. He used to call my mother his mamushka. He would always come over to the home. And when Ivan would come, I mean, he would come for the polivka, you know, for the soups and the foods that he was missing. And then, you know, people like Ivan Klima here and Miroslav Holub, they became very close friends. I read with them, performed with them every time I was here. And then when they were in the States, Holub even stayed with me at my home. He sent his daughter Denisa there to stay and study English for about a month. So, I mean, these are the kinds of connections I made.
Tell us about your interactions with Václav Havel. When did you first meet him? How did it go? How did it happen?
Yeah, it was in 1990 already when he was already elected. He was still president of Czechoslovakia. That didn't change until 1992. And he came to Los Angeles to receive an award at UCLA. And since I had already been writing quite a bit as a dissident, he was made aware of that and he understood it, so he asked for a meeting. And that's the first thing he did was look at me and he said, "We are colleagues," put his hand out and shook my hand. And he said to me, I remember all of this, he just said, "I'm asking all Czechoslovaks to come back and donate something to the country, not money, something of you." And I said, "Well, you know me as the writer, but I'm also an educator." And he said, "That's it. You'll come back and teach at our university." And so for 22 years, I teach every summer at Charles University. And then his wonderful brother, Ivan Havel, and Dasha, his wife, offered me the place to stay at the residence. So I've been staying there since.
That's Havel's old flat by the river. Nabreži,
yeah, right on the river with a beautiful view of the Vltava and then the castle that he looked at every day. And I'm actually in the large apartment that he lived in, but also that he made his office during his presidency there. He stayed there for a while.
Do you ever feel his ghost at your shoulder?
In many ways, yeah, because I know how he always was concerned. Are you getting your work done? Why aren't your plays getting done here? He was always there, but he gave me that sense of participating in the changes that occurred. So I was always on his radar. I mean, I remember walking up with my class up Neruda, and he was sitting at his favorite bar. I guess he used to come from the castle to go have security were around him, and he's calling me over. And I bring the whole student body over. I introduce them to, this is the president of the Czech Republic. You can imagine how they felt. But that's how he was. He was just inclusive, and the fact that he wanted to be a people's president was important. The fact that he brought Salman Rushdie here when no one else would was the kind of person. He took his risks, and he truly did lead this country through the worst part of its, rebirth.
American poet James Ragan talking there to my colleague Ian Willoughby. And that edition of One on One brings us to the end of our English language broadcast. If you have any comments about today's programme, then please send them to us. You can contact us by email at english@radio.cz or on Facebook and Twitter. We'll be glad to hear from you. But that's all for now from me, Ruth Franková. Thank you very much for joining us and goodbye.